Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
For today's special episode, we invited Byron Katie, one of the women we were most excited to have on the podcast ever since we started, and someone we truly admire for her work and her questioning process, the one that has given us a lot of guidance throughout our personal lives. In this episode, we talk about how to take responsibility of our lives and take action, how to stop living in the past or the future and actually learn to be present, how to set healthy boundaries according to our values and the life we want to live. This and much more is discussed in this episode. We hope you enjoy it as much as we did.
From the beginning.
Se regalan dudas nace de la infinita necesidad de cuestionarnos todo.
Todo.
Todo lo que está a nuestro alrededor. ¿Por qué creemos lo que creemos?
¿Qué alternativas hay?
¿De dónde venimos y hacia dónde vamos?
¿Cómo tomar decisiones más informadas?
Coexistir para vivir más intensamente sin dejar de crecer.
Hemos tenido tantas dudas durante tanto tiempo que te las queremos regalar.
Soy Leti Sagún.
Y yo Ashley Frangé.
Y en este espacio invitamos a
expertos, amigos, profesores, gente que queremos y que admiramos, que sabe y nos sabe tanto
de todo eso que tendríamos que estar hablando.
First of all, hi, Byron. We are extremely excited. I don't know if we've been more excited in our entire podcast than being here with you sharing this moment. You've inspired our work, but most importantly, our personal journeys. And that's why we really wanted to talk to you today, because all we can do for our community and our listeners is just to share what we've learned. And I believe we've learned the most with you. So first of all, thank you for being here.
Oh, my goodness. It's a privilege. And thank you for inviting me.
My first question for you would be, it wasn't until we read your book, which we've recommended with our community, that we, for the first time, got to understand what it means to question your thoughts, to actually acknowledge the fact that we are suffering because of the stories that we are believing and the stories that we're telling ourselves over and over and over, but not because of the facts that happened. So I don't know if you can first sort of tell the story of how you came to acknowledge this. I know it's a big story, but maybe you can just try to tell us to us here.
I'll just give you my experience. After more than a decade of deep depression, as I lay sleeping on the floor because I didn't think I was worth a bed. And so that particular morning, as I lay sleeping on the floor, a cockroach crawled over my foot and I opened my eyes and there was a space between sleeping there and then waking up. And in that space, the ego didn't have enough time to fill in that space. And in that space, I was awakened to the cause of all suffering and how this crazy mind of mine created my entire world. And in that, all the suffering was gone. All the pain was gone. And I've come to see the most important thing in that experience is that when we believe our thoughts, we suffer. And when we question our thoughts, we literally wake up to another world. And I don't mean some spooky, I mean the world, like where we are with our families, with ourselves, with what's really going on, as opposed to what I am believing is going on. And so to hear people, to be a really good listener, over the years, I've had to question, like, you say something, and then I imagine what you really mean by that. Like, what they're saying is, what they mean is, and it convolutes the whole discussion. So because I've been just sitting in these four questions, just sitting in this inquiry that I have the privilege of sharing with the world, I've become a really good listener. I can hear my children. I can hear my husband. I can hear my grandchildren. And as a result, when I really listen, I feel more compassion when they're either complaining or sad, and I can experience their joy when they're telling me how happy they are and why, and it's just, it's a whole other world. I'm connected to my family, to the people in the world that I meet and come across, and just like I'm very connected to the two of you right now. It's just because I am just, I don't have a story on you other than just seeing you the way you are. And there are words like magnificent and beautiful and smiling, and there's a sparkle coming off of your glasses and your earphones, and your, I can just go on and on and on. And I don't need it because I see your beauty. And the way I see, I am responsible for. And if I'm not connected with you, it's like, oh, they expect me to say this or that, or they expect me to be wise or smart, or they, what they want to know is, well, I don't think I'll tell them that. Dun, 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 dun. It's gone. And so I'm present. And it's such a fearless world. And like you too, I want that for everyone.
Let me ask my second question for you is, sometimes you're talking about this presence and about doing the work of questioning and coming frontal with no expectation to other people, just allowing them to be whoever they are. But sometimes I feel that our brains tricks us into coming in spaces with a story or coming into places with our expectation. How have you trained your mind, or how do you practice this of coming in without expectations? Because I personally find it hard. We walk with expectations of the all the time. Like, how do you do it to just come in a room or in this conversation with zero expectations?
It's a result of having done enough Judge Your Neighbor worksheets. It's just what's left. It just leaves me in a kinder, more understandable world. It's a world where I don't have to know the future, not one moment ahead. It's like the work has shown me that the universe is friendly and that I don't have to worry. And when I'm not worried, I'm much more prepared to deal with the world than if I am worried. When we're fearful, we say and do things that we are sorry for. And then we live out of this world of guilt. It brings guilt. And then we try to forget about it. And then for some of us, we compulsively overeat, or we smoke that cigarette we said we'd never smoke again, or on and on, or we drink the drink, or we're angry at our children, etc. And then we have to apologize. On, yada, yada, yada. Whereas I just come empty, it's a gift of me having questioned my mind over these. It's the work is a practice. It's a practice in stillness and getting still enough just to look at, for example, he doesn't care about me. And then to feel that kind of emotion that happens if I believe it. and to just question, he doesn't care about me, is it true? And then to get still enough to see my answer, the authentic answer, not the one I think it's supposed to be or the one that's going to fix me, but to be shown as I listen to, is it true? He doesn't care about me. And when I am shown the answer, if I am courageous enough, I just allow it to fill me. And then I look at how do I react when I believe the thought, he doesn't care about me. And then I close my eyes, but I can still see how I reacted when I believed it and how I was with him and how inauthentic I was maybe, or how I interrupted him, or maybe I gave him the look, that the accusing look. You know, I get to sit in how I react when I believe the thought, he doesn't care about me. And it does, it takes courage to see myself, in the stillness without judgment, just to witness the answer to the question, how do I react? How did I react in that situation when I believed the thought? And then it brings sometimes a lot of tears, and sometimes, oh boy, it's quite a thing to sit in oneself and be honest. But, you know, it's personal work. It's not something anyone can give us. You know, people are kind enough to give us our problems so that we can question our mind and come to love the world and to see this friendly universe for what it really is. The world is beautiful as it is, but what I was thinking and believing about the world, that could use a little work. And so I continue the practice of sitting in myself using these four questions and turnaround.
So to the people listening at this moment that might not be familiar with Byron Katie's work, she refers to these four questions that are everywhere on the internet, even in her book, if you want more details on how to work on them. But what I love about these four questions, Byron, is that they bring the responsibility, I don't know if it's the right word, back to us. Because for a long time, at least, the way I lived my life was always blaming someone else for what was going on in my life, never knowing that there was something I could do about these situations. And I feel that in a way, this information empowers you to actually free yourself.
It does. And I think the word is responsibility. That word works for me too. It's like I had to take personal responsibility for what I was thinking and believing. And before I could even get a glimpse of any kind of awareness, any kind of freedom, it's you know, it's almost like people can be cruel in the world. Okay, but I can't afford it, because when I'm cruel, it hurts me, and then I react out of that, and I say and do hurtful things to the people I love, that are the people closest to me in my life. And so, yeah, like you, I take responsibility for that. And this work certainly brings it home to us, doesn't it? Front and center. Oh my God.
No, because once you see it, you can't unsee it. It's like once you see it, you have to do something about it, because now it's within you.
Yeah. 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 Like he was cruel. And then when we get to those where we find opposites in that situation, I was cruel. Well, let's say he was really, really, really cruel, and I just said this one little thing. I have to own. I was cruel. I was cruel. It's not, this is not about him. If I'm cruel in any way, then I can't afford it. It hurts. It's what gives us heart attacks. It's what shifts our personality from loving and caring to resentful and hurtful.
I have one question, Byron. I've been doing the work for a few years. I actually went to Ojai to meet you, and I sat at your workshops. And I constantly find myself, when I do the work, maybe I'm doing it wrong, but when I do the work, I constantly feel like I'm invalidating my feelings. say, for example, he doesn't care about me, okay? And it feels like he doesn't care about me. And I...
Yes, it does, because you're believing it. And so now we go to, how do I react? The third question, there are only four. How do I react? What happens when I believe the thought he doesn't care about me? And now I'm in touch with those feelings you were just describing. It's how I react when I believe the thought. And then I notice those images of past and future. It's how the mind reacts when we think the thought. We see how physically it affects us, how we react. But mentally, how does the mind go to past and future when we believe the thought? He doesn't care about me. And then we see the past where other people didn't care about me. And then we see the future where he's going to say something terrible about us, or he's going to hurt our feelings if we see him in front of other people. He's going to ruin my reputation. And then I see in the past, you know, past, future. Now, as I witness how my mind reacts in this not now, past, future, not now. As I sit in that, I can see now that it is a movie in my head of the not now. And as I see that movie, then I understand the cause of the physical emotions I'm experiencing. And then when we see that person on the street again, if we haven't done our work, when we look at that person, all those images of past future come, and then we feel embarrassed or hurt or angry, and we treat them that way. That is putting what we believe upon them before they even say a word to us. And just, you know, why can't I meet just my fellow human being as a clean slate? Well, that's that fourth question. Who would I be without the thought, that he doesn't care about me? And then I turn it around. I try opposites. He does care about me. Now, that takes a lot of stillness, and it's hard for the ego just to kind of step aside. He does care about me. And so I look for any kind of signal or recognition with my eyes closed. This is a meditative process. With my eyes closed, you know, oh my gosh, I see in that situation, he smiled. Oh my goodness, I see in that situation, not one time did he say, I don't care about you. And then I just continue to be there now, just letting what happened then show me the reality as opposed to what I was believing about him. He doesn't care about me. I don't care about him. Okay, so where was it in that situation? I wasn't caring about him.
So much responsibility, but it's within ourselves completely.
And I'm responsible for it. I cannot dress for him the way that would please him. I can't say the things that I have to be 100% inauthentic to get him to like me. It's so much work, and I don't even know that he would like me anyway. But what I can tell you is I don't like me when I'm living out of an inauthentic me, an inauthentic life. It's so
painful and so painful.
So Byron, now that you're saying, or now that you just mentioned the word inauthentic, I feel like one of the most powerful concepts I've come to with your work is coming back to your authentic self, or to integrity, maybe. For the people listening at this moment, if they're feeling disconnected from themselves, that I feel is also a part of our culture, how it promotes being distracted the whole time, not being in contact with their own selves, what would you suggest, or how can we begin this journey back to us? Because I feel like in order to believe that wisdom and knowledge and everything is within you, you need to start from very small steps. It's not like one day you wake up. Well, it happened to you, but it didn't happen to me that one day I woke up and now I'm like everything is within me. I've got it all good.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I said in this practice, and I continue every time I do the work with someone, I'm doing my work as well. Going back to your question, what I would do is I would ask myself mentally, whose business am I in right now? And let's say I'm thinking of my daughter and I'm being critical and she is in Chicago and I'm in New York and I'm thinking of her and I'm thinking, you know, yada, 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 yada. And I'm just so upset. Okay, so whose business am I in? That's where I would start. I saw only three kinds of business: my business, your business, God's business. So in that situation, I'm in my daughter's business. So I am here in actually I'm not in New York, I'm in California, but here I am in California and I'm mentally with my daughter in Chicago. And there's no one here for me. There are two of us over there for her, but there's no one here for me. And just that, you know, just come home to myself and then get in touch with what was I thinking and believing about my daughter that would cause me. It's obvious that she's not causing that. We're states apart. We're worlds apart. It's got to land on me. So she can't take care of me. I've got to do that myself. So what I was thinking and believing about her belongs on that Judge Your Neighbor worksheet. It's always free on ByronKatie.com or thework.com. How to do the work. And did you know also that we're doing an hour from 9 to 10 Pacific time? The breakfast hour that at home and my goodness, we had no idea it would help so many people. And so of course I love that people that want to sit in the work, if they can't find you, that that they can start with it's always free on ByronKatie.com, how to do the work.
Byron, I have a question. What has been more and more important in my personal journey has been these things, business that you're talking, the universe business, other people business, and my business. Latino Americans tend to mind everyone's business all the time. Mom minds her kids' business until that she dies, and dad, and we're constantly on each other's business as a culture, as a personal hobby, and it's kind of how we grew up. And so for me, separating these things of like, this is only my business. And now I understand other people business with my business. But what I have trouble understanding sometimes is the universe business. We witness racism against Latinos, or like men treating women incorrectly, Tuscan masculinity, and all these things that we constantly grew up with. I don't know how to draw the line within what is my business and why I'm witnessing something, or what is the universe business. Could you clarify, or could you give me some tips of how to identify where it's none of my business anymore?
It's like if we look at prejudice, and I watch on the news, like someone so prejudiced. And they can afford that. I can't. And so I work on me, and we have one less prejudiced person in the world. So I make the difference. And anytime I experience a prejudice in me, it is my job to clean it up, or I am reinforcing prejudice in the world. That's why we feel guilt. We cannot get away with it. And when we experience guilt, defense comes with that guilt, and it requires that we attack anyone that disagrees with us. I can't afford it. It's my job to end prejudice in my world. And it's my responsibility. I can't expect people not to be prejudiced. It's got to begin with me, or where is the possibility? When I started, I didn't even know that some things were possible. I didn't think it was possible until the work found me. And what has shifted in my life is so, it's indescribable. It's beyond what I can tell or teach. But these questions are for all of us who are open to them. So let's say this person on television that is so prejudiced, the way I judge that person also belongs on paper. Prejudice is prejudice. I can't afford it. And here's why I can't afford it, sweetheart. When I'm prejudiced, my mind is closed. And when my mind is closed, I'm blind. I can't see. And a kind mind is a wise mind. And it understands how to live in the world and be an example of what works. And what works is a match to the heart. And it's a match to everyone's heart, but don't expect people to see it. But do you see it? And I look back at my life the way it was before the work, and that's my gift too. That pain, that suffering, that discontent, and the difference I experience today. I know that when I start emotionally moving back into those areas, that there's something going on in my head and I'm out of my business and I need to put what I'm believing and thinking on paper and I need to bring me home. I need to bring me back to peace so that I can be of service in the world, living what I expect what I expected the world to live. Let it begin here, because if I can't do it, how can I be such a hypocrite to think others should do that?
And now that you're talking about other people's businesses, I feel that that relates to what Ashley was saying at the beginning about high expectations about everything. And at least this is speaking from a very personal view, but what has hurt me the most when I start questioning my thoughts is this permanent idea in my head of how things should be, including me. How I should be, how I should behave, how I should love, how the other person should love me, how my life should be, my work. And you just get caught up because you, or at least I've never met up with those expectations I set for myself or for others. So it's like living in a constant pain because you feel like there's something great out there, but you're not it.
Yeah. And when we do enough work, we find we don't want to be it, you know, that authenticity is the last thing we were looking for. And it's the most powerful. It's the thing we long for the most, just being authentically free enough to accept, not just accept, but to understand that people care about me or they don't. They think I'm beautiful or they think I'm ugly or they think I'm old or they think I'm this or this or this or that. And I can't change another person's mind. But I can work with my own. And it's not about how people see me. It's about how I see myself when I'm with people, because I'm the one I live with. Where was I cruel? Where was I? If you look like you're obviously, Letty, you're obviously gorgeous, but you're never, let's say, for example, whether it's true or not, you're not ever going to be enough for you. And that's not personal. I'm just talking to anyone out there out of my own experience. Because you look in the mirror and then you see, like, are you married or do you have a, you know, relationship? Or, okay. So let's say you're walking down the street and he looks at another woman and you look on at his face and you become jealous. Okay. Or he says something and you feel that burn, that jealous. Okay, or he just talks about someone. Let's say you're sitting home and he talks about someone and you start feeling jealous because he's talking about her, okay? So let's say you've never met her, or even if you have. You see an image of her in your mind's eye, and she's prettier, she's smarter, she's all those things you're not. But that is, and then you compare her with you, and you're always going to lose. So that's a worksheet, because the ego compares. And she could be someone the world agrees with. She's just not very pretty. But you are, when you compare, as you sit with him and he talks about her, she's smarter, she's kinder, she's this, she's that. And then there's you. You know, it's just the ego works that way. So the more we do our work, the more when our mind compares, it's like, why do I feel so bad, so badly? I'm comparing myself with imagination, something that's not a person in my head. That's not her. That's not a real person. That's imagination. So is my boyfriend causing this jealousy in me? Or am I going to take responsibility and look at the real cause? It was what I was imagining her to be compared with who I believe me to be. And that's not me, and that's not her. It's jealousy can't happen anyway. My husband could fall in love with someone and run off with her. And if I'm not happy for him, then I have to look to me. Because, you know, did I really love him? Meaning, if I'm not happy for him, that's not love. But I mean, why do I have to be the person that makes him happy? The idea is, if I love him, that he's happy. And then he runs off with her, and rather than cry, you know, I do my work, and I think, wow, I don't have to do his dishes anymore. I don't have to share my, oh, you know what I mean. I'm joking, but for some of us, that's, you know, we get serious, and when we start loving ourselves, we start trusting ourselves, and we begin to see ourselves, experience ourselves without faking it, that we're the best company we've ever had. It's like, I am the best company I've ever had. Everyone in my world adds to that until imagination takes over. So if I ever feel jealousy or envy, again, I need to look to myself. And how do I react when I believe the thought, he likes her more than me, or he likes her? I see an image of the two of them together in the future, and I see an image of me in my head.
Forever and ever.
Oh, forever and ever and ever. Yeah, so now I have to up my game, you know, and my face is getting a little old. I need to do a little thing about that, and and I need to lose a little weight. I'm just a da-da-da, or I need to get, you know, whatever it is. I'm unacceptable to myself. And I love, oh my gosh, I love the 77-year-old body. It's doing the best it can. You know, that's not who and what I am. My mind is so far beyond the physical world as I sit in this practice of these four questions and turnarounds.
This has nothing to do with what we're talking, but now that you just said that, can I ask you, because I don't think I've ever read anything about you talking, what do you believe happens after we die? Do you believe in an afterlife, or?
So what happens when you're at sleep at night and you're not dreaming? Do you exist?
Yes.
Okay, but do you think you exist when you're asleep and not dreaming?
No.
No. So you wake up in the morning, you think, oh, I am awake. Oh, I'm late for work. Oh, I need coffee. Da, 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 da. I brush my teeth. Da, 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 da. And so you dreamed you were asleep. The moment you wake up and think, oh, I'm awake. what happens to your identity when you're asleep at night. And notice the friendly universe. You open your eyes and there you are. I am awake. And for all you know, once you begin inquiry, for all you know, that's the first moment of your life. And you weren't a baby. You were born in that moment. And that's what it's like when you do the work. Everything you need to have a happy life is here now. And that's pushing the envelope a little far. But if you look at your entire life as you've experienced it in the past up to this moment is completely dead. How you doing? This is, you're in life after life. And if you don't love it, you know, we have this work to wake us up to reality. And then, and if you died, how would you know it? You have to wake up the next morning and say, I am awake. And Earth is school. This is the school. And I am something that I remember or anticipate. And that's all there is of me. And that is all there is of you. And I have a God so immovably powerful. It is all the goodness I am. And anything that would move me from that, I question. And God for me is everyone and everything.
I want to cry. It's so beautiful.
I'm so grateful for this work, and it's such a privilege to pass it on. And thank you for doing that book study to bring this work in such a funny way to people, and I'm glad you enjoyed it.
It's literally been like an honor to meet you and then interview you, because what I love more about what you did is sometimes I feel that the theory of healing yourself, of questioning yourself, of finding yourself can be so confusing for someone that has no background. And with your work, I found so simple, so close to me, to be able to question myself all the time in the practice and to be able to find these questions within myself, because we are constantly thinking, my love will come from when that person loves me, when I find God, when I understand what's going to happen with me when I die. And it's like, it is like to shift the attention completely towards me has literally changed my complete life and has impacted my entire existence.
Yeah, it's, you know, God is closer than we, God is closer than we could possibly imagine. There is nothing but that. And until the mind matches that, we could use a little work. There are words for it, like beautiful, kind, connected, at home.
Just before we say goodbye, there's a phrase by you that I love and I have near me the entire time. And it says, you are the one you have been waiting for. To me, just listening to that before we leave this space is liberating, because it means all the other stories, all the other time and energy we've been putting out there to external resources is completely out of the question now. And I just feel empowered.
Yeah. And rightfully so, because we meet the love of our life every time we question anything that would oppose our beautiful nature.
Thank you so much, Byron. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your work. Thank you for your book. We've enjoyed it so much, and our book club has enjoyed it as much. And I think thank you is what sums up everything that we feel about you.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for passing on your beautiful light and your beautiful, oh my gosh, I don't have a lot of words, you know. Oh my goodness. Just thank you. What you do matters. It matters. And I'm so grateful. The kinder you are, the kinder a world.
I love you, literally. So thank you so much for this moment. I appreciate it from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you to your team as well. They've been so nice to us. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for our time together. Bye-bye, beloveds. Join Chronic Corner where the big boys play.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.